Headlines.
Live from Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. In the left corner, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
And in the right corner, I am Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
Welcome to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. In round one, the long-awaited meeting between President Trump and Russian President Putin goes into overtime, and Rex Tillerson spills the beans on what they talked about. In round two, President Trump tweets a confusing message about the DNC server, and Lee and I discuss the CrowdStrike report controversy, along with some over-the-top political satire that seems to be spreading. And in round three, candidate Trump rejected the government's job figures, but President Trump welcomes them as good news. That and more coming up on today's a fabulous episode of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Well, Lee, we got big things going on as usual, but most importantly, if you want to be a part of the show, all you have to do is listen to it, listen to our past episodes, go to iTunes, look up Fault Lines, and you can subscribe, you can leave a review, and you can leave a five-star rating. Additionally, we are on, you can go to the Radio Sputnik's News Agency Facebook page, and there we are on Facebook Live. That way you can watch it, you can save it later, you can share it with your friends, you can do all kinds of fun things. And of course, most importantly, 105.5 FM in Washington, D.C.
You know, I got one of those, the Apple TVs.
Yeah?
The little boxes, right? Uh-huh. And I got it from my office because I can take the output of my computer and I can post it there automatically. The reason I mention this is because when you get an Apple TV, it's got the podcast app pre-installed and built in. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's another way. Now, by the way, it's not going to be magic. It's still going to be audio only. But if you wanted to, if you've got the Apple TV, and by the way, the screensavers are fabulous. They got drone footage. They really, like when they go, like the Apple, the Fire Stick from Amazon.
Yeah.
I like that. I've got one and that's good too. But it's just pictures. This has like cool drone footage, but I got to say, for anybody, if the easiest way to get the iTunes app is if you're an Apple user, Apple TV, iPhone, iPad, go to the podcast app, type in Fault Lines, and you can find. That's why I mention it.
Yeah, that's it, because you want to check us out. So let's start here. So the big question, you know, the big thing, and let me start by making this statement. There's maybe one or two people who haven't heard this show before and don't know where I stand. There is a fault line in the Democratic Party.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. Between a kind of a Democratic establishment that is very much on board with this kind of, you know, the whole Russia collusion thing, and other people such as me who say, look, when I see evidence, which I haven't seen yet, if I see evidence of anything, you know, I'm an evidence person. Okay, I'm down with evidence. But meanwhile,
let me just say why. Yeah. And we'll talk about this more in the second round. You've got to remember that the same people attacking Trump on this Trump-Russia thing, their original target was Bernie Sanders.
Exactly.
And you're a Bernie Sanders supporter. So this is really, this was not just something that Hillary Clinton played on Trump. This was something, and we'll talk about it in the second round.
Yeah, right.
But I just want to put it in people's heads. This is something that Hillary Clinton played on Bernie Sanders first. So keep that in mind. We'll talk about it.
And
in
as a Democrat, look, let's face it, the Democratic Party does one thing really, really well, lose. And my belief is that if they continue with the strategy, an election strategy that says, you know, that for 2018, that says Russia, 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 they're going nowhere. And that's what they're doing. So it's not that I'm like, oh, I hate the Democratic Party. It's I hate how stupid they are. And the fact that they will not get back to policy issues means nothing but doom for the party. I don't necessarily want to see that. I'd like to see the party become viable. I think the country is best with two viable parties. But right now, we don't have two viable parties because one of them is the party of impeachment.
Now, so I hate the Democratic Party, and I love it when they're stupid. But let's talk about their house organ. They have a house organ. I don't know if you've heard of it, called the establishment media. So Donald Trump's in Europe at the G20. And I just want to point out what the headlines are. People can watch the headlines. The New York Times, I checked the New York Times out. So Trump just met with President Putin. The headline should be, and I'm going to explain why in a second. The headline should be Trump and Putin reach Syria ceasefire deal. That's the most important story. But their headline is Trump pushes Putin on Russian election meddling. Now, here's what I'm saying. This is why I'm saying the serious story is inarguably the most important story in the world. If you're going to put something at the top, the Syrian conflict, the Syrian civil war has created a refugee crisis, which is changing the face of Europe, causing mass political upheavals in Italy, in Germany, in France, all across the UK, all across Europe, in the United States, and also led to the rise of ISIS and these other Islamist jihadist groups.
Well, there's one other important thing to this, too.
But so that's the more important story, but that's not their lead.
Here's what else is important about the serious story, about Trump and Putin, President Trump, President Putin, Putin reaching the Syria agreement.
I'm telling you, you're going to get written up.
Because there are many people, you know, Sam Nunn and a number of other Democrats pinned a letter, an open letter that they sent to President Trump. And in it, you know what they addressed? Real policy issues. Why?
Right.
Because there were people that looked at this and said, we do not want this to turn into a proxy war, a Cold War style proxy war between the United States and Russia. Because we saw the U.S. shoot down a Syrian plane, which is a Russian ally. And people are saying, uh-oh, this is dangerous. This could be a hot shooting war between the United States and Syria, which could end up in nuclear annihilation for all of us. For those of us, for many reasonable people who said, lower the tensions between the two big nuclear superpowers so we don't take a chance of everyone getting annihilated, when you see them reach a ceasefire deal in which they say the U.S. and Russia promise to ensure that all groups here comply with the ceasefire and provide humanitarian access. And also, the Russian military police, coordinating with U.S. and Jordan, will initially ensure security in the de-escalation zone. So when we see the Russia and the United States working together to ensure that a ceasefire works, that means they're probably not going to be nuking each other. And you know, Lee, I'm thinking, sitting here in Washington, D.C., I'm thinking that's probably a good idea.
Let me talk about the nuking each other thing, because I don't even agree with your formulation there. I know what you're getting at, and I think you'll agree with me when you hear me say this. I want people to try to pierce the veil of the media propaganda war that's being fought against you by the U.S. establishment media. And I want you to ask yourself the following question. Now, really think about this, Garland. Try to take the counter position. Really think about it. Be honest. Because we haven't talked about this before. There are leaders in the world who say negative, incendiary stuff about the United States all the time. For instance, the leader of North Korea, Kim.
Right.
Agreed, right?
Certainly, yeah.
Right? Think about Vladimir Putin for a second. What has he said incendiary? Vladimir Putin is not banging his shoe on the table saying, we will bury you.
Right.
He is not. In fact, we helped shoot down a Syrian plane. We shot missiles in. Putin's reaction, I just want people to think of this themselves. Really think about this. You are being told, and if you're listening to this, you're clearly not buying into the propaganda, so because you wouldn't be listening to Radio Sputnik. But ask yourself and ask your friends who are buying into the hysteria. Tell me, what has Putin said? When I see Putin, and again, I'm not defending the guy because I don't even see what I'm supposed to defend. If Putin came out and was like, we will bury the United States. We will crush them. That would be like, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be working here. That would be very,
right, exactly.
That would be very difficult for me. Instead, I see, and this cuts completely against the narrative, but tell me if I'm wrong, somebody who's actually been measured and calm about this. And I'll tell you, I've been watching the Putin interviews that Oliver Stone did on Showtime. Anybody who wants to have your mind kind of blown, watch episode 3 of that. Now, they mentioned George Soros in there briefly, who I talk about daily now because I want people to understand it. But watch that and see if you get a different perspective on Ukraine and what happened there in 2014. And then try this crazy exercise. Try looking into Putin's statements for yourself and see what you think. See, make up your own mind.
Let me add this. You know, and see, as a Democrat, you know, I'm supposed to take certain positions or I'm Uncle Tom in on the Democrats. But when the fact of the matter is this, there are a lot of people like me who say, look, Donald Trump's the president. He won. He's the president. So now when we recognize that he's the president, I'm not going to run around like my hair is on fire all the time saying, how do we impeach him? How do we take him out? Here's what I'm going to say. He's the president. How can we influence policy in a way that's best for all of us? He's the president. You can't change that. How do we influence policy? I tell you what I've noticed and been, I don't know if I'll say it's surprised because I didn't know much about him. I think that Rex Tillerson, for all of my rejection of him, and, you know, we call him, you know, on the left, Rex on Drillerson and all that kind of stuff. Here's the fact of the matter. I think that he's been measured when it comes to dealing with Russia. I don't think he's been unreasonable. And when Rex Tillerson's job has been time and again to lower the tensions with Russia, which I support and approve of. But the problem I have is that with the Democratic leadership is, it appears to me, based on, like, if you look at some things, you can go online and see the kind of things that Chuck Schumer said today. It appears to me that they don't want to reduce tensions with Russia, that they
no,
see
they
reducing tensions
right.
to Russia
right.
as contrary to their 2018 and 2020 electoral strategy. And if it's anything like their 2016 electoral strategy, I oppose that anyway. They got to get back to some policies that I can latch a hold of. But there's nothing there right
but
now.
But it's more than that, Garland. They don't want the reality about what the U.S. did in Syria to be exposed. And this is not just the Democrats. It's Republicans like John McCain, who, by the way, was also big on this Ukraine thing. The whole Ukraine thing. Here's two things the American people don't know very much about. And they don't know very much about them because the media has told them very little about them. They don't know what's really happening in Syria, and they don't know what's really happened in the Ukraine. They don't know that the rebels that we backed in Syria are jihadist, and they don't know that the overthrow that we had in the Ukraine was backed by the U.S.,
yep,
was backed by Hillary Clinton when she was in there, was backed by Obama when he was in there, was backed by the CIA, it seems, as well. By the way, they're another player, that we were basically backing Nazis. In other words,
oh, yes.
I mean, John McCain, he's done two photo ops that he should be called out for every day. And by the way, you notice John McCain, when he ran for president, boom, they attacked him. Notice the media doesn't ask any tough questions of these people. We'll talk about John Podesta in a second.
If you want to understand about Ukraine's history a bit, talk to older Jewish people. They know
right.
about Ukraine and the Ukrainian Red Guard. You know, they know that these people were, the Nazis were nice guys besides these guys. I mean, the Ukrainian Red
yes.
Guard was, they slaughtered more Jews than, you know, than anyone else. That's where most of the Jews were killed in Eastern Europe. So the people that we were backing, and did you know this? As soon as they got in power, a bunch of the pro-Nazi people started putting out anti-Semitic literature as soon as we helped them get in power.
Well, John McCain has two photo ops that he needs to be held accountable for every single day, and the media never holds him accountable for them. One of the photo ops he did was with a kidnapper in Syria, a known jihadist criminal. There's John McCain grinning away. Then he did a photo op. He was on stage with one of these Nazis, right, in Ukraine. Two photo ops. Now, the media, the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN, et cetera, as long as you're going along with their narrative, as long as you're going along with this idea. Now, by the way, who's on the other side of both of these things? Russia. If you look at the Ukraine, when you hear the annexing the Crimea and so on, when you look into it, that region had voted to keep Russia in there. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I know enough about the situation where I can answer every question about it, like in detail, because quite frankly, I was busy with Syria,
right,
and was barely looking into that until the past few months. That being said, I urge people to look for themselves.
Well,
people to look up for themselves and figure out what's actually going on.
See, the thing about this meeting that's important is this. So Lee and I talk about to this meeting about what our main point of discussion is, the Syria agreement, which, as Lee said, I agree. That is should be the focal point. They talked. They were supposed to talk for 30 minutes.
Yes.
They talked for 2 hours and 16 minutes.
And got an agreement.
And got
think
an agreement.
About, think
so
about that.
And
that's
Rex
huge
Tillerson
news.
Said that most of the meeting was about Syria. He actually came out. Rex Tillerson said in a press conference, by and large, our objectives are the same in Syria. And we talked about the next step. That was the area, let's face it, the Middle East is where all of the issues right now. If you can get an agreement in the Middle East, certainly you've got Europe and you've got Eastern Europe and you've got a lot of issues going on there with NATO. But if you can get an agreement with in the Middle East, you can decrease the chances of a hot war going on where we've got guns there and we've got aircraft and anti-aircraft setups and they've got the same thing. So that's the discussion. And something was and instead, the media wants to focus on the election meddling, which the other thing that Tillerson said was, look, when they ask him a lot about that, he says, we're looking at moving forward.
Well, this is what I don't like about Tillerson, but quite frankly, I don't like about any of the Republicans. And I'm going to give a message to anyone in the administration. I'm going to send up a signal flare. I'll mention it again to Bannon. You know, sometimes I send Steve text. But I don't, it's not like I expect a response or get one back. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Stop cowering on this Russia narrative. Donald Trump is doing the best job possible of asking the tough questions. Ask the DNC. You need to put this back on the DNC. Why didn't they let the FBI examine
the
service?
You know what? I've got almost a very similar message to the Democratic Party, and that is this. People are sick and tired. The polls tell you that people have had enough of Russia, Russia, Russia. They want policies that are going to
let me
deal
give,
with their
Let
with
me give some advice to Bernie
life.
People, though. No, I hear you.
You know what I mean?
But
the party, here's my point. The party has already fallen apart, and you're not going to put it back together until you address policy issues. And you know what they're going to do, Lee? They're going to call me a Kremlin puppet.
But here's what I'm saying.
Go address policy issues.
I'm saying go further, Garland. I'm saying it's not enough to say, hey, let's drop it. Hey, let's drop it. No, let's not drop it. Let's not drop it. Let's put it right back in Hillary Clinton's lap. Let's put it right back in John Podesta's lap. God bless the president this morning for having the guts to bring this up again. This needs to be in Hillary Clinton's face every single day. Instead of seeing a news story, oh, Hillary Clinton went to a Broadway show. Yay, she was applauded. No, no, no. Hillary Clinton is a criminal, period. Hillary Clinton is a criminal. What she did with the DNC, her own server, her own private server, she never, when she was Secretary of State, she never used the official email system, period. Comey helped cover that up for her, unfortunately.
Note to all Democrats listening, if you're expecting me to defend Hillary Clinton, you're going to hear crickets here because I'm not defending her because my point with Clinton and her people, Clinton et al., is they robbed Bernie. So how could I trust them
and
doing
I,
anything?
And I wish Bernie and other people would hit back on that hard.
But we'll be back. We got plenty of things to talk about in round two. We're going to talk about CrowdStrike. We're going to talk about some really over-the-top political satire going on in Europe, spreading from here. Who knows what's going on, but we're going to be right back. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
It is time for round two. Garland, you're doing that messed me up, man. Garland, Garland's dancing across from me. And I caught it out of the corner of my eye.
My hands up in the air, feeling the music, man. I'm feeling
okay.
It, Lee. I'm feeling
okay.
It, buddy.
It did mess me up a little bit. Are we going to do the boot scootin' boogie, too? In round two, let's talk about our president today. President Trump tweeted earlier, and here's what he said. Let me quote. I'm not going to do the Trump voice. Everyone here is talking about why John Podesta refused to give the DNC server to the FBI and to the CIA. Disgraceful. Now,
he was a little confused because John Podesta didn't have the server, but we understand what he meant.
Well, I do understand what he meant. And I got to say, I don't know. Here's what I know. I don't know if, and I'm not one of those people who defends Trump. No, he's playing 12-dimensional chess. On this one, I got to say, if Donald Trump had asked a perfectly rational question, what I mean by that is, no, John Podesta was not leading the DNC at the time. That's true. You could say that. However, the point that he's making is completely valid.
Now, one quick point about the tweet, about the timing of the tweet, before you get into it, the timing of the tweet, and that is, I think President Trump knew, I'm going in to meet with Vladimir Putin.
Yes.
And they're coming after me with all the guns. And I think he wanted to fire a salvo. You know what I mean? He wanted to get a first jab in before the punches started. Well, I think that's what that tweet was about. Strategically, it was a smart move.
Let me give you a weird marketing trick. But this is true. And I, by the way, I don't do this. If you see a misspelling in my tweets, it's because I screwed up. But they've done tests. If you misspell something in the headline, do you think it gets more views or less views?
More.
More. Why? Because psychologically, it jumps out at you. You notice the misspelling. You see what I'm saying? And so it makes you notice something. So what I'm saying here is that if Donald Trump had said, I've been thinking the DNC really should have let the FBI examine the servers. What the media would have done is ignored that tweet. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense, yeah.
They absolutely would have avoided it. But by him saying something like everybody's talking about, and I think that was the bait, actually. I think that was the bait. Because do I think everybody, no, I don't. I don't care. It doesn't make any difference. This is the key issue. Let's go over this. The DNC started this narrative about Russia. And I told Garland, I want to take a little bit of time to go over it in this segment, because if you're new, if you're listening on 105.5 FM in the Beltway, you've been fed a pack of lies by the media, and it takes more than 30 seconds to unpack that pack of lies. So let's start with this. The narrative that the Russians were behind the hack started over a year ago, June 14th. In an article by Ellen Nakashima at the Washington Post. That's when it started, June 14th. June 15th, CrowdStrike, who's the cybersecurity firm hired and employed and still employed by the DNC, published an article, and they're the ones who've been saying it's Russia. At no point has the FBI or the NSA, and we know this from sworn testimony from Mike Rogers and James Comey, looked at the servers. Now, let me add one other thing here before I let Garland take over for a little bit. I mentioned in the last round that this started with Bernie Sanders. Where did CrowdStrike first get hired by the DNC? And the answer came at the beginning of the year. Do you remember the story? And you'll remember more details than I do, Garland, that Bernie Sanders' campaign was accused of breaking into the DNC, and they were literally denied access to the voter rolls.
To their own information.
To their own information, to the point where Bernie Sanders had to sue. Now, I'm just going to mention this, and then you can pick it up from here, because you do know more about this than I do. The company that the DNC hired was CrowdStrike. And CrowdStrike came in, working for the DNC, and said, yeah, the Bernie campaign hacked in. So before they blamed Russia for hacking into the DNC, CrowdStrike blamed Bernie. It's interesting to me that the cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike, who's funded by Eric Schmidt's Google, by the way, Alphabet, the company, the parent company of Google, just did $100 million in funding. That this company, co-founded by a former FBI cybersecurity expert named Sean Henry and a Russian expat, Dmitry Alperovich. It's interesting to me that this country always comes up with exactly the conclusion the DNC wants.
Well, the other part here is this. So you don't know. And people say, well, why are you going all the way back to that? Why are you talking about that? Because on a day-to-day basis, we hear CNN, we hear MSNBC say the Russians hacked into this. The Russians did this as though it's a matter of fact. And it's important that we talk about where that comes from. They're saying it as though it's a matter of fact, when really they're saying it as an act of faith, not as a matter of fact. So what did James Comey testify? James Comey testified, when for all the saying he knew that the Russians hacked, James Comey testified that CrowdStrike never presented him any evidence that they briefed him. They never gave him any technical information, that he met with the people, the representatives from CrowdStrike, after they checked the server, that the DNC would not allow them to him to look at the server. They would not allow the Department of Homeland Security chief later testified, they would not allow the Department of Homeland Security to look at the server and to patch it so that nobody could get in if it had been accessed, and that he didn't get any technical information, that basically he had to take CrowdStrike's word for it. So CrowdStrike was being paid by the DNC. The DNC had a position. The CrowdStrike supported the position of their employer. And they told him that without providing any technical information whatsoever. And so now the media goes forward and says, this is the way it is. I think it's important to talk about this and for Lee and I to start this. Of course, you know, we're going to be called Kremlin puppets because, you know, we're on Sputnik. But the fact of the matter is this, Lee and I, for any of those who've been listening to me on Pacifica, I've been saying this for months and months long before I even heard of Sputnik. And Lee's been saying the same thing on various other places, including Breitbart Radio. And other places beforehand. But the fact of the matter is this. So now we are in, and here's my point. Now we are in a situation where our mainstream media outlets have convinced, it's like having people convinced that Saddam Hussein worked with Al-Qaeda. It's like having people convinced that there were weapons of mass destruction. And what do you know, Lee? It's the exact same people that convinced people of all those things that were false, that are convincing people of these same things. That I'm not saying they're false or not false. I'm simply saying the evidence of it happening has not been permitted.
Well, and here's what bothers me. So the president did a press conference yesterday in Poland. And we talked about this yesterday. We didn't get into it in the show, but we talked about it in the show prep, remember?
Yep.
I said that it's very interesting to me that Trump makes a statement in the press conference. And by the way, he was savaged by the media for questioning the intel community on weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He attacked the intel community. Well, guess what? Donald Trump was questioning the intel community.
Well, I guess I've attacked them, too. I guess anybody with any sense has attacked them because they were wrong about the weapons of mass destruction.
Including the media, by the way. Including the media.
Right.
Including the media. And by the way, I don't know when the height of journalistic bravery was going along with everything the intel community says. I just don't. I missed that memo. I missed that memo when that equals journalistic integrity. Now, what they're doing is, now, and this is what's frustrating to me. See, I've said this before. I know that the president gets some good advice because I'm a big fan of Steve Bannon's and I know Steve. I think the president is getting plenty of bad advice. I'm not happy with the likes of Gary Cohn and Dina Powell, and I'm not thrilled with Rex Tillerson. I'm not thrilled with Rex Tillerson this morning cowing to this idea that somehow it's a slam dunk that the Russians were behind it. It's not. I've interviewed technical experts. The only proof comes from CrowdStrike, and as I pointed out, this is the thing, I say this over and over again, look it up for yourself. On December 22nd, CrowdStrike issued a report claiming that, okay, this is it, the slam dunk, the Russians hacked Ukrainian artillery. A week later, they kicked diplomats out. Now, remember when the U.S. kicked diplomats out? You remember Putin's response?
They didn't do the same.
They did not do the same. Remember him banging his shoe on?
No, that didn't happen.
No, it was a measured. It was, frankly, normally you get a tit for tat, right? Normally, if we throw out five, they throw out five. That's what happens.
Yeah, of course.
They didn't. I don't think they even did that. Did they even do that?
No, they didn't. And here's my problem with the Russia hair on fire people who are going to, of course, call me Kremlin puppet, which is fine. And that is,
which I'm so sick of, by the way.
Yeah,
I'm so sick of
you know,
that.
It goes along with the whole narrative. So today, just as an aside, just an example, today I read that I believe it was Mitch McConnell or the president, someone said, well, you know what? If we don't have enough people in the Republican caucus to pass health care, I guess we'll have to work with the Democrats. So as a Democrat right now, the Democratic Party as a party. If I'm leading the party, I say, let's put together some proposals. Let's put together some things. Let's start coming up with some. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying, okay, we have a policy area now that we can make ourselves look good and we can present something to the American people and we can say, we're a viable party again. We got something done. You have an opportunity to do something. And Chuck Schumer is screaming, Russia, Russia, Russia. He actually released a list of things that he wanted President Trump to ask Vladimir Putin. And it was basically a verbal assault. It was a waste of time when you need to be addressing some opportunities. I'm throwing my hands up at the Democratic Party. They're toast as far as I'm concerned.
Here's
they're fools.
Why. Well, we talked about this before, too. I got to say this. If you're listening to this show, we're a political talk show, right? Therefore, you're weird. What I mean by that is most people aren't interested enough in politics to listen to political talk shows. Most people have jobs and lives and kids and everything else. So first off, God bless you for listening. Second off, you've got to understand that most Americans are sick of both sides. They're sick of the division. They're sick of both sides. And they realize this is all a flipping game. That's what they realize.
Yep.
They realize that.
And you know what they realize, Lee? That they're losing the game. They realize it's a game. And most people are looking at it and saying, it's a game and I ain't winning. I'm losing every time. All my men are off the board here. What's going on?
Now, I
want to
make sure.
The Pop-O-Matic doesn't work anymore.
I want to make sure we talk about some of the other stuff that's going on in the G20. But I did want to take a few minutes on that CrowdStrike thing. Don't take my word for it. Go look it up. Go start to Google it yourself. See, this is what the establishment. Look, the establishment media is. It's not so much that they're afraid of us; they're afraid of people's ability to get information for themselves. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
And I think that that's the biggest fear. Now, that being said, let's make sure we talk about some of the other stuff going on at the G20.
Lee and I have our opinions, and we say what we want. But I think it's important for us to always say that Lee and I agree on this. You know how I learn about politics and these issues and the things that we're talking about, Lee? I go out, I Google, I search, I go online, and I look for myself. Here's what I'm saying. Don't believe Garland Nixon. Don't believe Lee Stranahan. Take your time to go on the very things that I tell you about, whatever we say about the Ukraine, about CrowdStrike, etc. Google it yourself. Find the information yourself. I'm not trying to guide you or lead you anywhere. I'm simply saying the information's it's the truth is out there, but you can't trust the corporate media to give it to you.
And by the way,
you can't even trust me. Trust yourself.
I just want to note for the people in the booth, if we can take the last segment and just cut out, don't trust Garland Nixon. And make that a promo for the show. That would be awesome. No, but I know I agree with you completely. I agree with you completely. And that's why both of us say all the time, look this stuff up for yourself. Now, there's these protests going on. These protests are these anti-capitalist protests, which is what they are. The people are protesting against capitalism.
Can I clap?
And you can, but the idea. So let's do this, Garland. I'm going to try again. Name a system that's worked out better for people than capitalism. Name it. I'll wait.
Better? That's what everybody's working with. System right now. That's the system
know,
we're working.
I know. So has socialism and communism
like Borg,
worked out
man.
Better? I'll wait.
Capitalism is the Borg. Resistance is futile right now.
That's right. So
but,
is
but
it
people on
what
the street,
system
you know
has
why?
Worked?
Because they're losing at that game. That's why on the street, because they're losing and they're tired of losing.
They don't get the problem is not capitalism. The problem is oligarchy. The problem is the collusion. The problem with Goldman Sachs is not that they're capitalists. The problem with Goldman Sachs is that, and this is my criticism, it's been my criticism of George Bush, Dick Cheney, and other people like that who I've been very critical of, and I'm still very critical of. They learned the secret, which is if you're a Democrat, you just love big government. And then you take money from the corporations, right? If you're a conservative, you talk about small government, but then you actually get the government bigger and bigger. Bush and Cheney are not small government people. Now, that being said, the thing I wanted to mention
I'll say this. You said the problem is not capitalism, it's not oligarchy.
But we only have a couple minutes, Garland.
And then I'm going to tell you what I think the problem is. Go ahead.
But I want to make sure we talk about the story.
So I'll just say this then. I don't think the problem is capitalism. I agree with you on oligarchy. I think the problem is deregulation and the version of globalization that we're having. Okay.
Deregulation is the opposite of oligarchy, but we'll talk about that later.
Creates oligarchy.
So there's 160 cops at last count who've been injured in these protests. These protests show, once again, the violence of the left. The leftists are the violent ones. Period. Tell that to the 160 cops. Go laugh at them, Garland. Go laugh in German or whatever.
Is violent. Oh, that's really funny. The history doesn't tell us that.
Yes, it does.
History doesn't tell us that.
What?
history doesn't tell us that. Yeah, the Bush administration, the right, they were so calm. The fact of the matter is
the Bush
is
administration,
this.
Compare that to the Khmer Rouge. Do you know about the killing fields? Are you familiar with the killing fields? Who is responsible for the killing fields?
We're talking about fascism.
Go talk about.
We're talking about fascist
leaders.
No,
you're not. You're talking about, that's not what they call themselves.
We're talking about
they call
fascist leaders.
They call themselves socialist
fascist
and communist.
How about
Soviet Union? We're on Radio Sputnik. How about the Soviet Union? How about what happened during the revolution?
Stalin, fascist leader. Hitler, fascist leader. Mao Zedong, fascist leader.
Garland, what planet are you on where Stalin was a fascist? He's a communist, period.
He was a fascist.
What?
He was a fascist leader.
Prove it. I'll wait. Prove
it. I'm saying, look, fascism.
He's not a fascist. He's a communist.
No. You don't
know. No. He's a communist.
Yeah, he is a fascist. He was a fascist. Mao Zedong was a fascist.
They were communists.
Leaders. I'm not saying they weren't communists. Hitler called himself a national socialist.
Right. And I know, because he was a national socialist.
Right. So you can't
words
get any,
mean
my
things,
point
Garland.
Is you can't get any further to the right than Hitler.
What you're trying to do is you're trying to define it out of existence. Now, the point
I'm not trying to just define it by giving things a term. It's not just what a term is. It's what you have here. Stalin was a nationalist.
Yes.
A nationalist?
Yes, because communists tend to be nationalists.
Right?
That's right.
Hitler was a far right-wing nationalist. Because you're far
right,
left
because
or
communists
right,
are nationalists. Socialists are nationalists.
So it doesn't mean.
They're collectivists.
It doesn't.
Oh,
the
my God.
Right or far left
Garland,
doesn't mean
not
you can't
even,
be a
we
fascist.
Only have a few seconds left. The point is, the other point, it's aside from the fact that it shows the delusions about the violence of the left. There's this group that's
well,
been.
No delusion about the violence of the
there's
right.
There's this group that's been putting out this supposed satire. Oh, we didn't even get to talk about it.
Oh, well, that's okay. We got to talk about right-wing and left-wing fascism. And you got a lesson in international politics, so that's good enough.
Or unicorns. Coming up next, we have more. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
Welcome back to round three of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. 105.5 FM in Washington, D.C. You can go to the Sputnik News Agency page and you can check us out. You can on Facebook Live. You can go to the Sputnik News Agency Facebook page, Facebook Live, and you can tell your friends there. And if somebody wants to watch or listen to our show, they can go there later. They can share with their friends. Also, we are on iTunes. You can subscribe and you can leave a review. And okay, so we're here we are, Lee. We're round three. A couple of things. And I made a point here. I made a point in saying that as a candidate, Mr. Trump repeatedly rejected the government's monthly estimates as phony. Now he's in the Oval Office and he embraces them as evidence of his success. But and here's what's the truth. You know, I try to be fair and nonpartisan as much as I can. That's not something that everybody doesn't do. You know what I mean? When a candidate's running, if you're a politician, you take credit for everything you can take credit for. As Casey Stengel said when he was the manager of the Yankees, and they said, you're a genius. He said, being a genius is the art of taking credit for all the home runs that somebody else hit. So the fact of the matter is, he's a politician. You're supposed to say, I mean, even if your first day, even if you haven't even been in yet and you just got elected and the economy turns around, you're supposed to say it's all because I got elected and everybody thinks it's going to be. That's the right thing to do. But the fact of the matter is a couple things here. So let me read the numbers and we'll get to it. So they were expecting $175,000 jobs. It was 222,000 jobs were added last month. Unemployment rate was 4.4%. The average hourly wage grew by 2.5% from a year earlier. The labor force participation rate inched up to 62.8. But here's the thing about it. The wage numbers are still certainly weaker than expected. So the fact of the matter is some things are looking good. We're 8 years out from the initial, you know, the Great Recession, but still the numbers in the average person's pocket, you know, they're seeing these numbers, but the real dollars in the average guy's pocket aren't there yet.
Well, a few things. Hey, first off, you know, it occurs to me, and I'm going to do this because we mentioned to people that they should read, you know, leave us a review if they're on iTunes or something like that. I'm just going to say something, show housekeeping before I get into the issue here. Do me a favor, retweet and share this stuff too. If you're watching the show on Periscope, if you're watching on Facebook Live, do me a favor and retweet and share it. It makes a big difference. Now, when I'm doing a Periscope, I will look into the camera and tell people, retweet it.
At Stranahan, by the way, that's Lee's tweet. Go to @Stranahan, his Twitter account. Go to @Stranahan, Follow Lee. He does these shows live on Periscope. So if you're not watching on Facebook Live, you can watch it on Periscope at Stranahan. Follow me at Garland Nixon.
Wherever you're watching, do me a favor and retweet it on social media. And the reason why is I think we are the most disruptive radio show in America. And I think we're giving people something they don't get anywhere else. Okay. First off, let me go after your statement that Donald Trump didn't trust the numbers. Let me explain why. The Obama administration was lying when they talked about employment numbers. And here's the way they were lying. It's very specific. They were not talking about, because when you calculate unemployment, there are two things you can use. And I'm leaving aside wages and stuff like that, which I think is a valid way to look at stuff, by the way. I think that's a valid concern as well. So I'm not questioning it. But there's two things you can look at. You can look at the unemployment rate, which is calculated a certain way. Or you can look at the workforce participation rate. Now, what the Obama administration did was they would ignore the workforce participation rate and focus on the unemployment numbers. And the problem is you can gin up the unemployment numbers because the unemployment numbers do not include people who've given up looking for work. So when Donald Trump and people who are small government advocates like myself were calling BS on the Obama numbers, that's why. There's a very specific reason. It's because we felt that they were being ginned up. Now, by the way, there's another metric you could use, for instance, which is first-time unemployment claims. That's another way to. I'm just saying, I'm not even filling in the numbers. I'm just saying you have to watch out for the unemployment rate. Now, I thought so I just want to clarify that because it's not like the argument was not, oh, well, Obama, we don't like the numbers. It was like, we don't like the way they're being calculated. And if you look at the workforce participation rate, it tells a very, during the Obama administration, tells a very different story.
Quick kind of retort to that. I think part of the issue with the Obama administration was this, from the left, the center and points, you know, from the center and points north. And that was when Barack Obama came in, it was over. The economy was done. We were toast. We were history. And what we did see, and everybody has to admit this, what we did see was a steady climb in the amount of jobs. And see, that's part of the question now.
Yes,
so
well,
there
yes.
There was a steady climb
yes
in a lot
no.
of things. We were in a really bad valley. So the question is, things have been going up for years under Obama. When he came in, we were toast. They were losing 735,000 jobs a month, the month he got sworn in. So the fact of the matter is, things continue to climb under Obama, and President Trump has been there for 6 months. Can he really take credit
Let me debate about the numbers again. Let me debate about the numbers without getting into the specific numbers. The other way that the Obama administration ginned the numbers up and the media went right along with them was that it was not differentiating between part-time and full-time employment. And what happened was a lot of the jobs that were added were part-time employment. Why were they part-time employment? Because if somebody was full-time, the employer had to provide benefits for them, right? And so because for a variety of reasons, employers looked at it, and I saw this at the time I was working at NBC. I was a graphic artist in the show Access Hollywood. NBC one day cut everybody's overtime. Now, not just on my show, across the lot, everybody, Tonight Show, every place. For me personally, here's what that meant. And I didn't notice it until tax time a year later. I lost $32,000 in overtime. You with me? Just immediately. Now, again, here's what I noticed day to day. Gee, my life kind of sucks more. What's going on? I have.
Why is it so dark in here? My light bill hasn't been paid this month.
No, I'm really serious about this.
Yeah, I understand.
I thought I was a loser. I just was like, gee, why am I having to get a payday loan? I guess I'm not managing my money. Then it came tax time. And I'm like, then I was able to compare what I made one year to what I made the year before. Does that make sense? And I was like, oh, my God, $32,000 is an income for a lot of people. That's what I lost.
That's a huge amount of money. Well, you know, the other thing that isn't taken into account in all of these numbers, and this is what generated, I believe this is what got Donald Trump elected. One of a couple of things that got Donald Trump elected. One of the things that's not in here is this, that during the recession, because of the way things were changed, because of the way the economy was reset over the last 25 years, after the recession, well over 95% of the money in the recovery went to the top 1%. And so even now, when we see these numbers, when we see the stock market go up, when we see these rosy numbers, the fact of the matter, and everybody knows this, and that's why people are unhappy. And that's why I think Donald Trump didn't get elected because he's a Republican. He got elected because he ran as the anti-politician. He ran, regardless of what he is now, as not a Republican and not a Democrat, because people looked at these numbers. Oh, boy, the numbers are going, even under Obama, the numbers are going up every month. But my life stinks, and all the money's going to the rich, and
I'm getting nothing.
And that's why he won. Now, the fact of the matter is, I don't think looking at his Wall Street cabinet, which I don't think is the same Wall Street cabinet, I think is the same Wall Street cabinet that Hillary Clinton would have put in. I don't think he's going to fix it, but that's my assessment of the issue.
And by the way, Ann Coulter agrees with you, and I know it's going to make your head explode. I know, but Ann Coulter agrees with you. Ann Coulter has come out and said she likes two members of the cabinet, and that's about right.
That's two more than me.
That's about right. And Ann Coulter has been tough on this. So what I'm saying is the biggest mistake I think that President Trump is making is he needs to listen, like they say, leave the dance with the one that brung you, right? He needs to listen to the people who elected him more, and that's why the rise of Cohn and Powell and people like that inside the White House worries me. Let me say the other thing about these numbers, though. And this is a big deal, and this also shows the way the media distorts things. So a few months ago, the Trump administration announced their budget projections. I was in the White House covering the White House briefings at the time. And I'll probably be back in the White House next week or whenever Trump's back. I'm planning to go back. I had some health problems, and so I was like so I'm dressed a little more casual this week. I'm taking it easier because I don't want to push myself too hard, but I'll probably be back in the White House next week or the week after. But when he announced his budget numbers, they were based on a 3% GDP growth projection. And I remember at the time, the media said, well, this is crazy. There will never be a 3% growth in the GDP. That is completely crazy. Now, what they've come out with this morning, and it was on NPR that I heard it, by the way. So when NPR has to admit this, it's trouble. We're on track for a 3% growth in GDP, period. That's what we're on track for. So my point is, the media never takes responsibility for saying, remember we told you a few months ago that 3% GDP was like not possible? Well, we don't know how to break this to you, but President Trump may be about to do it. They'll never say that in a million years. And so that's the other thing I find very, very interesting about these numbers, is that he seems to be on track. Now, again, this is good news. And what I'm saying is this, Garland, is that the media has an establishment Democrat spin to it. And so when Obama was in office, they spun the numbers his way. Now that Trump is in the office, they're not going to spin the numbers his way. There's not going to be the numbers are the numbers. There's very little they can do about that. But they're not going to spin them at all in a way that's beneficial to the president.
A big part of the discussion now needs to be, but that is something that doesn't happen, and that is, what do these numbers show? Because when they give you all kinds of, esoteric terms about the numbers, and people are scratching their head, and what happens? Ultimately, people can feel their standard of living go up or down. You know what I mean? So there was a time when the average worker would see the stock market go up, and they would say, oh, that's good, and they would feel their wages go up, and they would see their life get better. They'd see it go down, and they'd feel that. They'd see these numbers change. But one of the things, there are a couple stories in here I was reading, and what they were talking about was, there are a lot of jobs, right? But some of the employers were saying, yeah, but we're paying people $10 an hour and people can't afford, we're like outside of the city. People can't afford to drive here for $10 an hour. That the jobs, there was a time when people could go to General Motors or Chrysler and get a job making a good amount, and raise and feed their family. And so now one of the discussions is that the jobs that are there don't pay what people need. So let me sum it up like this. As long as the standard of living for the middle class and the working class is uncomfortable, the political landscape will be uncomfortable and unstable. And you'll see it in 2018. My prediction is you're going to see, you know what, here's my prediction. I'll leave a prediction here. You're going to see a rise of independence. You're going to see people start saying, parties are puppets for Wall Street.
They're
puppets for the corporations. We saw it with whether it was Bush with a cabinet or Clinton or Bush or Obama or Trump with a cabinet full of Wall Street billionaires. All of them, the ones I voted for and the ones you voted for and all of them. And I keep getting nothing. And you're going to see some obscure independents and people are going to say, I don't know who this guy is. They thought it was Trump. But he gave us the same kind of cabinet. You're going to see some independents in Congress and all over the place.
It ain't over till it's
over.
We're still very early in the Trump administration, and Trump has been hampered. So you talk about wages. You've not seen an increase in wages yet. Part of that issue is you're not going to want to hear this, but the fact is Trump getting the illegal aliens out of this country is going to raise wages.
Nothing to do with it.
Not, completely false.
It's going to make people can't find people.
No.
You know, people are complaining.
No,
I
wait
got
a second.
Right here.
I let you talk. Let me talk. Now, first off, let me ask you a question, though. Do you think companies employ illegal aliens out of the goodness of their heart or because they can pay them less money?
Well, from what I see here, it's because they can't find anybody else to do the
work.
That's
not true.
That's very true.
That's not. Okay, so let's talk about what would happen. Let's talk about what would happen. If they couldn't find people. Yeah, here's what it is, Garland. If I have a job and I'm like, I need someone to clean my septic tank, I'm offering $10. And nobody calls. I put a Craigslist ad up. What do I do?
You're out of luck.
No, that's not what I do. I say $20. It's a market. So I say $20. And eventually I'm going to hit a point where somebody comes and takes that job. So I'm gonna try to speak your language, Garland. You're suspicious of companies. I'm saying to you, I'm agreeing with you. Companies don't hire illegal aliens out of the goodness of their heart. They hire them because they can hire them for less money because they're working under the table, off the books, illegally. That's why. Now,
I disagree with that. There are a lot of them hired because they can't find people. I've got Star Cleaning and Roofing and Rooforia Interiors in Omaha who said, we did everything we could to recruit people and had not one application. She is depending on guest worker visas to fill openings for the season.
Let me explain.
It's hard work in Nebraska,
she
said. We have hot summers and you're on a black asphalt at $17 an hour. The pay is fair. She said
the pay is fair.
It's so difficult to find American residents to fill jobs.
Let
that
me
do
explain
not require,
how markets
they can't
work.
Find
so
people.
You're saying the pay is fair,
yep.
And the market is
and
saying,
they can't find people.
Listen to me, and the market is saying different. Do you want wages to go up? Get rid of the illegals, because here's why. What will happen is if the illegals, right, so they're like, well, we need guest worker visas. And the answer is no, you need to change your business model and you need to pay people more. I'm the one, Garland, in favor of people being paid more. And I'm saying, let the market work and don't let these companies use these government measures like guest worker visas in order to drive wages down.
And I would say to you, the market is working and it's doing
not
what
working.
It does. Yes, here's my point. It is
it's
working,
not working.
And what it does isn't in the benefit of everybody. Here's my point. So let's go in the opposite direction. You're saying the fault of wages is the guy at the bottom, the poor guy at the bottom who can't read and write, who wants to pick grapes.
I'm saying
it's the people at the top who are making the decisions,
right.
Not the
it's
guy
the
at the bottom.
It's the people at the top who are going to the government and saying, I need a guest worker program. That's what I'm saying. The fact is, if I offer, I need someone to mow my lawn, $10, nobody does it. I offer $15, $20, $25. Now I get up to $30. Now I start to go, okay, I don't know if it's worth $30 to me, but that's what the market will bear. I find someone who can do it for $30. Should I clean it myself? This is the way the market works. As soon as you go to the government and said, hey, I need you to bring in some immigrants to do the job for me, you've driven wages
down.
Well,
see, I don't believe in the magic market. I believe the whole magic market is a fraud. The idea that the market is going to somehow fix everything is a conservative belief.
You're saying
that's false,
I'm not
and that has never been
Garland,
true, and it still isn't.
Tell me what you do. If I'm trying to hire somebody to mow my lawn and nobody will do it for $20 and nobody will do it for $25, and then I go, well, if I kidnap somebody, that's not the magic market. That's going outside the market.
Well, see, the fact of the matter is because now you're telling somebody, we'll cut your lawn. How much is it going to be? $175 a week. And the guy's like, you can mow it with scissors. You price yourself out of the point where people can't do it.
That's
so now you're saying,
market.
I can't do it. I'm unable to do it. I'm out of business. And here's my point.
Right.
The magic, I don't believe that
I'm not
the
saying
market
magic.
Is magic and it should be unregulated and it's going to fix
everything.
Since when is
common sense? Everything I'm saying, anybody listening to me, every single person listening to me, you cannot answer. Tell me, you offer $25, you can't hire somebody, what do you do? Tell me what to do.
You price yourself out where people can no longer afford to get you to cut their grass.
And then what happens? You have to lower your prices. This is not magic,
still
darling.
Have, but you still could. If you couldn't find anybody at $22, you ain't going to find them at $18. You lower
what?
Your prices. You're going up. At any rate, we only got 20 seconds. I want to thank you very much for listening. We're at 105.5 FM here in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Fault Lines. We'll be back Monday with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.